The Women of Ill Repute, with your hosts, Wendy Mesley and Maureen Holloway.
Wendy, we talk a lot about fearless and funny women because that's what we are all about, but we don't really give enough credit to the fearless and funny men out there.
Yeah, but you know, is it really fair? Because, I don't know, I think it's easier for men to be fearless, you know, because of the patriarchy and all of that.
Yeah, the patriarchy and all that. Yes, but it's still, I don't care what gender you are, it's still pretty scary for everyone and anyone in these difficult times. I mean, making jokes about depression and abortion and the homeless, that's not easy.
Maureen, don't you mean what? People who are homeless?
Oh, people, exactly. You have to be so careful. People are so cautious. People are so easily offended.
Well, you can argue that there's nothing funny about, I don't know, about being homeless or being depressed or needing an abortion.
I would maintain it's not the topic. It's the way it's addressed, like the plumber who was depressed.
What about the plumber?
He was going through a lot of shit, okay? Look, at least I am trying. I am trying to push the boundary.
Well, some things are left to the pros. John Doerr is a pro. He's an actor. He's a writer from Ottawa. His stand-up has landed him on shows like Conan, The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, Just for Laughs. He's done a lot of stuff with Just for Laughs. He also created and starred in a series called Humor Resources, in which he played a version of himself as an HR manager in the comedy industry.
The comedy industry could use an HR manager. John is a boundary pusher. He'll find a way to make you laugh about anything or be deeply offended if that's the way you roll. People love him or they hate him, but they mostly love him because, in fact, he just won this year's Juno Award for Best Comedy Album.
So I'm wondering, is that why he now lives in Juneau, Alaska? Do you think he moved there to get...
Yeah. Say hello to John Doerr.
Hello.
Hey, John. How are you? Where are you?
Well, right now I'm in St. John's, Newfoundland. You couldn't get further from Juneau, Alaska. I'm on the road. I'm about to tell some jokes in the beautiful city of St. John's, Newfoundland.
You're on tour, and it's funny. St. John strikes me as a funny town. It sounds like it would be an easier audience there than, say, Regina. Although Regina's pretty funny.
I don't know if, I think all audiences are about the same across Canada,
really?
In my opinion. Yeah, that's my feeling. I mean, St. John's, it's a good time. And I think, they are probably pretty laid back with their approach. They're definitely grateful. So you have that advantage. When you get on stage, they're grateful for you being here.
Yeah.
So that I appreciate.
They must be really grateful in Juneau, Alaska. Like what? Like you're like a big deal. You're a star. I read somewhere you're a legend, which means you're a big deal. Like, what are you doing in Juneau? Or is it just about winning the Juno prize?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that I don't feel like I'm a big deal. I definitely don't know. It depends what you define a star as, but I definitely have never felt that way. I think I've always kind of flown a little bit under the radar. But Juneau, Alaska, I live there because I made a mistake. I followed my heart instead of following my brain. And that's a very risky thing to do. I was living in Los Angeles for about 10 years. Then I was doing a show up in Fairbanks, Alaska. And after that show, there was a human woman in the audience named Christina. And our eyes met. And we spent the next 4 days together traveling around Fairbanks, Alaska, going to dinner, having lunch, having wonderful conversations. And something had to give after we, visited one another and courted one another. And so I went up to Juneau, Alaska, gave up my beautiful life of drinking Miller Lite at 10 a.m. with my friends in Los Angeles under a palm tree. And I gave that up to move in with Christina and her daughter, 4.5-year-old daughter, Emma, at that time. So, yeah, that's why I moved to Juneau.
You're a dad to her kid, but you're a dad of another infant, too.
That's true. I was a bonus dad. I thought that's all I needed. I moved to Juneau, Alaska. I said to my partner, that's all we need. We've got a built-in family here. Emma's getting older. We can see the future. And then, boom, towards the end of the pandemic, although that's a weird statement to make, but around 2021, she let me know that she was indeed pregnant. The IUD failed us.
Uh-oh.
Let's talk about how you talk about this on stage. First of all, I love how Emma's become, you know, your best friend is now, I guess, a 6-year-old, and the conversations that ensue with that. And also your unwillingness to have your initial unwillingness to become a biological father yourself. You talk about that very openly. And I think some people are like, ooh, you would actually say that this is the result of a failure of birth control.
Well, yeah, I mean, we were using birth control.
So well, it didn't work.
One, exactly. But it says one thing, we definitely were not. Well, yeah, we were having conversations. And I was resisting the idea of having a child. And we didn't think this would ever be a real conversation until we got rid of said birth control. But again, yes, it failed us, and we ended up having a child, something that I never thought I wanted. Is now something I know I can never live without. So I definitely obviously come 180 degrees. But yeah, I was not planning on having a child.
When you did your special, John, you were talking about how some lady came up to you after about making jokes about abortion. You can't make abortion jokes. Only women can make abortion jokes. So I'm wondering what your thinking was behind that.
What my thinking was behind that particular joke that I tell?
Yeah.
Well, I like to talk about, I mean, that joke to me is more about the conversation of abortion. Yeah, I mean, it is a conversation that people seem to have, and do men have a right to really comment on abortion? It's definitely, in my opinion, a woman's issue. Pardon me?
But
the conversation is still there. So I think the joke is just walking the line and talking about something very, well, I'm being very facetious. You know, I'm talking about something that's attached immediately to great. There's a lot of intensity to that word, and it means a lot to a lot of people, and it's a very serious subject matter. So immediately I'm attracted to it for comedic purposes. So yeah, I like to talk about how that's my joke, and I've decided to keep it. And then I'm pro joke. And then it really, to me, it lets the audience still doesn't know what my politics are surrounding the topic, because am I pro joke? What does that mean?
You're pro joke.
Pro choice or pro life? I still don't think the politics are clear at the end of that joke. So it's fun to just kind of wade into those waters and then don't go any deeper.
Speaking of wading into those waters, so your fishing bit is absolutely one of the funniest things I have ever seen, and shows that you're as much of an actor as a comedian. But that's one of your easier pieces to perform, and I would imagine because people are delighted. I'm really impressed by your risky jokes. I mean, you start one with a joke about child leukemia, and you realize when you do that, all bets are off now. And you manage to get, I mean, you get a lot of those, sounds, but you get the laugh, you land the joke, and that's got to be like walking a tightrope.
Yes, and I'll be honest with you. In hindsight, I am not a fan of that joke. I don't think it's a joke. I would not tell that joke today. And yeah, I know the joke you're referring to, and the only time I know where that joke's from. That's the Conan O'Brien. You must have watched it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Workshopping the joke.
That is the only time I've recorded that joke. And I was apprehensive about doing that joke. I spoke to the booker of the Conan show about it. And I said, this is the one joke I'd like to take out. The only reason I need a heavy joke right there is because I'm able to really, I need something horrible to happen in order for me to move on to the next joke. But in hindsight, I don't think I would ever tell that joke again.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's too heavy. And I received a lot of emails afterwards. People found me and
really?
Contacted me. Yeah, it's one of the reasons I'm not on Facebook anymore, to be honest with
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Oh, and, I bet.
I thought about it a lot, and the joke did not need to be about that. I could have approached that joke a lot differently. So it is one of the regrets I have.
Huh.
Because it's just a joke. It's not a true story. It's not like I'm telling my own story of child leukemia. So Yeah, it's not a joke I'd tell again.
It's not your own joke.
Yes, it's not my own.
I find it really interesting. I mean, we sort of referred to it in the intro to you about how you've got to be really careful and in your with words. And in your routine, you do something about how you're not supposed to say a homeless person. You're supposed to say a person who is homeless. So how do you, I'm trying to figure out whether you're zany or whether you're meaningful, or I guess you're both, right? I mean, it's, and how do you, I mean, you've talked about the future of comedy and that it was all going to be great after COVID. Well, here we are. I mean, COVID is still around, but we're not worried about it in the same way. Like, how do you find the line between being funny and what's not funny, like leukemia? You wouldn't do that joke now.
Now, where in now in this time, where do you draw the line? Because I think there seemed to be a time where there was no line, and now you say that there is.
I don't. Well, I think that's subjective. It's personal to every comedian, every person. I don't know where I draw that line. I just know. Okay, I mean, I like to point out inconsistencies or ironies in the world or in the way people discuss topics. So my partner, Christina, fiance, I need to start saying fiance.
Fiance. Yeah.
She works for the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Her passion and her job is to influence policy at the state and federal level to make the world a better place for marginalized communities and groups. She's a passionate human being, and social justice causes, words mattering, is her whole life. And then there's me, the person who thinks, what about free speech? And we collide a lot. So normally, here's where I gauge the line. If it offends Christina, then I'm doing something right. Which is not absolutely true, but there's some truth to that. Because we'll get into a conversation about a lot of these topics. And sometimes we'll be in an argument. We'll be at each other's throats. We're in the worst domestic argument possible. We're in the kitchen. We are slinging insults at one another. We've gotten to a place that no couple wants to get to. And the horrible things we're saying to one another. For instance, she was delegating responsibilities to me. Now, imagine this is a domestic dispute between two people. They've had no sleep. They've got the kid off to school. The other kid's finally down for a nap. They're at each other's throats. And she's delegating responsibilities to me in a way that I found to be, she was a tyrannical dictator. So I said, oh, I'll get right to it, Hitler. To which he said, you do not say that in this house. You do not say that in this house. To which I said, oh, now you're a word Nazi. So I'm deliberately trying to poke her and irritate her because that is, you know, that is the language we're using at the moment. But now to me, that's a conversation that would make sense. And yes, of course, I'm not celebrating anything about Hitler or the Nazis, but I'm using those words, which are extreme, in a domestic situation. So they don't fit and they're exaggerations, but I think something like that is perfectly acceptable. But in that moment, Christina definitely does not want me to use, not even with her, but at any point, at any time in life, I am not to call anyone Hitler. Even if I'm exaggerating, I know where the line is, I think, and you definitely know when you cross it because you hear about it, but sometimes it's okay to cross it.
Yeah.
It depends on who's responding. So if my girlfriend's offended, then I then I know I'm going down the right road.
So she's still going to marry you. This is good.
Hey, who knows? Who knows what happens? Who knows what the next conversation is? I often wonder. I wonder if we are going to continue and go through with this this wedding.
Well, you know, Godspeed, because it's a crapshoot for anybody.
Hey there. Just so you know, Mo and I are not just the queens of podcasting.
I'm not sure we're even that, but do go on.
We're not part-time cowgirls.
We just made that up.
But we are writers. We're writers.
Wendy and I write a newsletter on Substack. It's a weekly roundup of thoughts and experiences, sometimes serious, often not.
Yeah, you're pretty funny. You write about falling down a lot. You write about your dog.
I do. You write about sex and politics and COVID.
All very, very serious things.
We have a few thousand subscribers, both free and paid.
And you could be one of them if you'd like. Just go to substack.com and look us up by name, or go to our website at womenofillrepute.com and sign up there. We'd love to meet you there.
And now back to being the queens of podcasting.
Yeah, sure.
The Women of Ill Repute.
So I found a quote of you. I don't know where. I watched all kinds of things that you did, and I think you're really funny and whatever. But in one of them, you said that your dream is for the business of comedy, the employees of comedy, and the customers of comedy to all exist in one giant room and not be offended. Is that ever going to happen? I mean, you've spoken about how after COVID there was going to be this whole new world. We can talk about how much things have changed or not changed afterwards. But is that ever going to happen where people are not, where Christine is not offended and you're not being offensive?
No, of course not. I would have been in character. That quote is from the character of John Doerr, human resources manager for stand-up comedians, who is a fool. He's an idiot who thinks that there should be, one big tent for comedians to perform under, and there is a set of rules they follow so that everyone laughs and is not offended. That's the foolish dream, the idealistic world that HR manager John Doerr imagines. But no, of course not. That's not possible, and it shouldn't be possible. I mean, yeah, I think comedy is going to be interesting for the next little while.
It is interesting because so many people are being stifled. I look at stuff that I wrote 10 years ago. I watch, like you said, your situation on Conan. I watch other comedians and writers, and I think, God, how did we get away with that? And my question to you now is it better that we can't get away with it, or is it worse?
I don't live or perform thinking, what can I get away with? So I don't think much has changed, to be honest with you. I think, if anything, it's a little more exciting to get out there and tell these jokes, because it's fun to figure out where that line is and what offends people. And if you can justify what you're saying and your argument is good, then yeah, I think you should do it. But I really don't think much has changed, at least for me. I'll find out soon, that's for sure. Someone might take issue with something I have to say. But is there something in particular you feel like, for instance, you said you've gone back and looked at some of the things you've said. Is there something in particular that you said or did that offended?
Oh my God, John, if you look at some of the stuff that I did 20 years ago, it's homophobic, which I'm not, but I did it to get a laugh, or, you know, I'm kind of ashamed because I actually would say things because they were funny, not because I really believed them.
Right.
I mean, in comedy, you don't have to believe what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, it was going for the cheap. That's why they call it a cheap laugh.
Right.
You're just saying it because someone's going to laugh at it, not because there's any real meaning or belief behind it. So yeah, I did that. I try not to do that anymore because it doesn't even represent how I feel.
Right.
I do think that I think there are people who, in our case, listen to podcasts or listen to the radio or even go to comedy shows looking to be offended.
Possibly. Yeah.
Back at, as far back as high school when everybody was doing homophobic jokes. And I don't know, I think it's good that we're more aware. I think it's good that we keep listening. I agree with everybody or whoever is making the argument that free speech is important too. But I think it's good that we're putting a new lens on that, and we're not just speaking to people who are going to think that our jokes are funny.
So, I agree.
But line somewhere is finding that line.
Yeah, I agree, but I don't think everyone was telling homophobic jokes. I know,
no.
but I understand what you're saying. It was, yeah, especially if you go back and look at like 80s, stand-up specials like Eddie Murphy's Delirious is a great example, you know, lots of funny in that special. However, yeah, there's some highly cancelable offenses that you could point to in that set talking about AIDS and homosexuality in a way that created that harmful stereotypes were definitely generated and being laughed at. I think we're mindful of othering people, which is good. I think we're slowly, and it's still here, but it's slowly not just a heterosexual heteronormative way of looking at the world. God, these words are now in my vocabulary.
I know.
But which is healthy, which is good. And yeah, Wendy, I think that's what Wendy was getting at was, yeah, it's healthy to be where we are.
You made some joke somewhere about how, you know, there's going to be a lot of words that in the future will be cancelable. Do you know what they are? I mean, you've used a
no.
couple.
No, that is HR manager John Dorr. That is a character.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've got to be careful. I've got to change the name of. I got to give my television personas a different name than mine, so that.
But there's a grand tradition of real life people, actors and comedians appearing in shows as themselves, but as douches. That seems to be the default. So that's I understood that when I saw you, John. You had a grand mal seizure, broke your neck.
I did.
That's funny.
Yeah, it's serious and it's out of the ordinary. I'd imagine most people do not have, I don't know what the stats and numbers are, but yeah, I had a seizure. I'd gone a good 42 years of my life without one. I was playing poker with a bunch of friends and a game in Los Angeles with a bunch of writers who I didn't know that well, by the way. So that's weird too, to have a seizure in front of people you don't know well. I fell, fractured a bone in my neck, had a concussion, woke up in the hospital, had no idea what had just happened to me. The funny part is the friends that I was with, I got an email that said, the good news is, because I was in the hand, and the email I got was, the good news is you made a straight on the river. And so they kept my money for me. And they said, the bad news is you have a tell. So every time I have a good hand, I have a seizure, I guess. So I fell.
Was it the only time? Was that an isolated incident?
Okay. So here we go. So I had the seizure. And very strange experience. For people who don't know, it's sudden abnormal electrical activity of your brain. Your brain just shuts off. You have no idea you have a seizure. Very intense, weird stuff, a seizure. And so I woke up in the hospital, neck brace on for 3 months. They insisted I go on. Several EEGs later, they found something on the left side of my brain called sharp waves. It just means it puts me in a category of people that have a 70% chance of a seizure reoccurring. So they suggest going on this medication. And I, of course, the fool I am, I say, no, I don't like the sound of these side effects. I'm not going on that medication. So I went to get a second opinion. And I was up in Canada. And I met with another neurologist. And that neurologist was leaning towards not taking the medication, but hadn't made a full diagnosis yet. I went back down to Los Angeles, had another seizure. I was on the phone with my manager, and I fell flat on my face again. And the next thing I know, I'm in an ambulance. So I went on the medication.
Oh.
So now I'm still on Keppra with anti-seizure medication. So I'm very lucky in that. Nothing horrible happened. Because, I mean, if you're on a flight of stairs when that happens or going down an escalator or who knows. It can be the end of you. So I got very lucky. And it took two seizures for me to take the medication. And I've been seizure-free now for a good 5 years. Feels great.
That's good.
You have weird side effects, though. The drugs have led to weird side effects?
I haven't noticed any. They say, you know, drowsiness, irritability, but they say it's different with everybody. And so my experience is that I haven't noticed any of these things. But I don't know. Like, I don't know if I know myself well enough to know if my behavior has changed. So you'd have to ask the people around me. But don't talk to Christina. She'll lie.
Can you drink?
Yes. Can I ever? You should see me go. What's that?
Wait. Miller Lite. We know what you drink.
Your Miller Lite at 10 a.m.?
Yes. It's just the perfect drink. It's a perfect day drink because you can have 1,000 of them.
And you're hydrating at the same time. That's how I feel about those.
Yeah, but I don't drink that much anymore. I mean, I've cut out everything except for beer and mostly light beer. But I rarely have a beer when I'm back home. With the family. My girlfriend does not drink at all. She's in recovery. So I don't keep beer in the house. I'll just, maybe I'll keep a six pack in the garage and occasionally have one, but that's rare. So, but when in Newfoundland.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It's a national pastime there. So your life has changed dramatically.
Sure. But whose hasn't? Yeah.
No, yours is done geographically and in terms of family, but you have a very tight group of friends, don't you?
I mean, sure, I've got friends all over the place. I've got friends in Los Angeles, friends in Ottawa, friends in Toronto, you know, family in Ottawa. I have friends everywhere but Alaska. So it's time to get out of there. Our plan is to move back to Canada. That's the hope and dream, is to move the family to Canada and just start over again in Canada with like the warmth and security of family and friends and you know, near Ottawa, Ontario, Canada, where I grew up. I just feel like it's a great community to raise a family. So that's the goal, is to bring everyone to Canada.
And Christina's good with that?
Well, depends on the day.
I guess.
Christina's never been to Canada.
Really?
Because of a past criminal record. So it's hard for her to get into the country, which is something we're trying to have expunged. My life is complicated at the moment. We've barely scratched the surface, by the way, but nothing's easy.
I can't even imagine.
Nothing is easy right now. Like, to bring the family to Canada can't be done at the moment, but our immigration lawyer is doing great work, and yeah, just another expense you got to pay for, but yeah, doing great work, and we're, yeah, that's the plan. Get the family to Canada. It may happen one day, may not.
So you are a Canadian. I mean, this is rather pathetic of, you know, we all have this obsession with the United States. You lived in L.A., but now you're in Juneau. So is that why Canada's appealing? Like, please tell us that you're coming back because you love us truly.
Well, that's of course why I want to come back. Yeah. Oh, no, I miss and love Canada. A lot of my work still comes from Canada. And I enjoy, when I land in Canada from the United States, I immediately have a nice exhale, and it feels good to be back home, no matter where I am, but specifically Ontario, where I grew up, just feels like home. Yeah, no, that's why I want to bring the family back, is because of family and friends, and yeah, I love aspects of Canada. There's no more pennies, no more pennies in Canada, that's good.
No more pennies, so come on back.
Yeah. Or dimes, or quarters. But tell us all the good stuff. I mean, you said we just scratched the surface. What's the deep, dark secret, John?
Well, I just mean there's a lot of problems. Like, nothing's simple. Like, nothing's, hey, let's move to Canada. Okay, let's visit first, see if we like it. Well, we can't even do that because of this past criminal record. So that's where, I mean, everything's complicated. For instance, Emma, who is Christina's stepdaughter, my stepdaughter, Christina's
she's
daughter,
your stepdaughter.
my stepdaughter. You know, when I first moved to Juneau, her father was in the picture, and moving Emma to Canada was going to be a problem because we couldn't take her out of state because the father is there. He was on a restraining order, and it was difficult for him to have access. But when he was given access, it's still something he has the right to say she can't leave the state. But that's no longer an issue.
Okay.
We won't go there, but good.
Yeah. Imagine. Yeah. So yeah, that's not a problem anymore.
Good.
Yeah. You can, you can guess as to why, but we'll just leave that hanging there.
Yeah. Well, that's one obstacle out of the way. I know that you, you are brother to Allison Dore, whom we've had on the show, and she adores you. And is it just the two of you, siblings?
Yes. Yeah. We got Dave Dore and Sharon Dore are the parents, and the kids are John Dore and Allison Dore.
Well, good for Dave and Sharon. Are you a funny family?
Think so. I mean, we're dysfunctional for sure.
Sure.
Very strange. Like, yeah, I think we're an odd bunch, but a great bunch. My parents are amazing. They're wonderful people. My mom was a nurse. My dad was a teacher, both retired now. So, you know, two noble people doing great work. And they raised two latchkey kids, John Dore and Allison Dore. I used to take her on the bus. I had no choice. I had to take her on the bus after school so I couldn't hang out with my friends. So a lot of resentment there. But our joke, I mean, we were always just being silly. Allison and I would always try and make our parents laugh or make each other laugh. I think we're a funny bunch, but we're strange. We're very odd.
I know what you're talking about. There are four siblings in my family and highly dysfunctional, and also, you know, one day I'll write a book or I won't. I don't know. But the thing that keeps us together is humor. We can all make you, or my parents are gone, but we can all make each other laugh even when we're, you know, really mad at each other.
Yeah.
And that's the one, it's a tool to get along with the world, but also within your own fractious situation. And I really hope for your sake and for Christina and Emma, and who's the baby?
Jackson.
I hope you all reunite with your family because it sounds like it'd be a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I think it would be a really beautiful thing to have that family in Canada. So yeah, agreed.
It was wonderful to hear Allison say, because I think everybody's sort of worried or wondering what on earth is going to happen to comedy. It's supposed to be free speech, it's supposed to be offensive, and yet can it really be? And Allison was saying, no, with social media, it's great because you get this social, you get feedback. So you know if something's not funny. And you sound kind of positive, other than, you know, the jokes and the fights with Christine in the kitchen about what's funny and what's not funny. You sound positive about, I don't know, the future of comedy.
I suppose. I mean, maybe I can't be any other way. I mean, it's all I do. I can't imagine really speaking negatively about it. But I honestly have not really noticed, I haven't noticed a change that is that big, or a shift in the audience's thinking. That may change from, you know, maybe different age groups feel differently. If you had a lopsided group of younger people, maybe that would be different, but I don't think so. I think it's how you talk about things. It's how you point them out. I haven't run into a problem yet personally, but who knows? Maybe it gets out to a certain group of people and then, you know, there's a huge swell of frustration amongst a mob of people that want to have you, whatever canceled means. But I haven't noticed it yet. I think it's how you talk about things. And it's so wonderful to feel the pressure of being challenged to do something.
What are you working on now?
Well, working on this Miller Lite, and it is delicious.
Not Newfoundland.
Yeah. Well, working on a few things. So season two of The Lake, which is a show that airs on Prime Video, Amazon Prime. We shoot it in North Bay. We did season one, and we just wrapped season two last summer. That comes out June 9th on Amazon Prime. So very excited about that. And who knows, maybe season three is in the pipe, but I have no idea. Pipeline. And working on a couple of show ideas. Traveling. I've recorded a second album, which I'm going to put out with Howl and Roar, my sister's comedy label. And then I have a couple of ideas, some television show outlines that I'm working on at the moment. And one of them is all about my life in Alaska and Christina and Emma and Jackson and me, and a fish out of water story of how a comedian moves from Los Angeles and lives in Juneau, Alaska. So that's the big one I'm working on right now. But that's about it.
That's Northern Exposure revisited it in some ways. But
it is. Yeah. It's Curb Your Enthusiasm meets Northern Exposure with a hint of genuine sincerity and teary-eyed moments.
Yeah, heartwarming.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. And why shouldn't it be?
Well, I think that's who you are. That's how I found you. And it's fascinating because I've actually been to Juneau. I went to Juneau to do a story about some weird aerial installation that the U.S. government had put in the bush in Juneau.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I don't know whether it's still there, but it was called HARP. And it was hidden in the bush in Juneau. And I went up there because there was all of these conspiracy theories about mind control and weather control.
Right.
Yeah. And then I went to interview somebody at DARPA about it. And he was like, yep. Don't know. Yep. Good story. So I don't think it exists anymore, but it's going to be, will it be hard to leave Juneau? I mean, Canada's amazing, obviously, but will it be hard?
No.
To leave there?
No.
No, not for me. Not at all. It is like, I've imagined my life back in Ontario. I cannot wait. I really want to be back in Canada. And it all has to do with my son, Jackson. And I can see how beautiful the world would be. Christina's, my girlfriend's also fiance is also an Indigenous Native Alaskan woman. And there's so much work. And I think she would really enjoy, you know, with all the grants going to Truth and Reconciliation projects in Canada, and the Ottawa is the perfect place to be. I think her work transfers and she can always do work in Alaska, but simultaneously there's so much great work that needs to be done in Canada. I just think it's the perfect time for the family to move. Will I miss Alaska? Absolutely not. Will Christina miss it? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And that's just more things for us to argue about. And really, what is a relationship other than that? That's what it's all about.
Well, come to Ottawa and argue there. We wish you all the luck in the world. We'd love to have you all back. And congratulations on your Juno and like the award as opposed to your home. And good luck with everything.
Thank you. This has been great. Wendy, Maureen, thank you.
It's been lovely to talk to you. I wish we could see your face, but there's just this big.
It's like you're cute as hell. That's a real
dumb. I know. I'm annoyed because I'm watching the two of you. And yeah, I wish you could see my face as well. I say that to most.
We'll look for it elsewhere. Thanks again, John.
Thank you.
Well, John Doerr is just the loveliest man. I know we say this about all our guests, and I don't know why we're surprised every time. We always come up going, well, they were lovely.
Yeah, I hate to say it. I wanted to ask him, but I thought, oh, no, it's just too awkward about the restraining order on the husband. But I guess, who cares? We don't need to answer. That's the journalist in me who needs to put a stop on it. But yeah, he's going to move back here, which it sounds pathetic to say, John, are you still a Canadian? But he's still so
very much
a Canadian.
And you know that a lot of Canadians, the tall poppies, no, not the tall poppies. That's when you take down somebody in Canada because they're successful. But the apologetic Canadian, well, I'm from Canada, but really where it's about is Los Angeles or New York, especially if you're in comedy or show business. He's got the opposite. It's like Ottawa is where he wants to be. Now, I've lived in Ottawa. You've been to Ottawa. It's not my idea of, good time. It's not. It's beautiful, but.
Yeah. Well, at 30, it's amazing, and you're close to the ski hills. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I think all I did was have dinner parties. But and I can't cook, so you can imagine how horrible they were. But I think they're going to have fun, and I think it's a great place for her if she cares about bringing people together and trying to make the world a better place, which is her thing. Should be everybody's thing. I think, yeah. So I hope they get through. So that would be great.
Funny and worthy people. There's no better combination. So anyway.
Women of Ill Repute was written and produced by Maureen Holloway and Wendy Mesley, with the help from the team at the Sound Off Media Company and producer Yet Belgraver. Come on a journey like no other, where you will discover many rogues that will lead you to a happier, healthier, and more stress-free life. And the beauty is, you don't need any vacation time for this adventure. The journey will come to you. Join Avery Rich on your very own journey into yoga. Along the way, she will demystify yoga poses and guide you into a yoga posture or short sequence, all in less than 15 minutes. You have nothing to lose but stress. The Journey into Yoga podcast. It's not for people who like yoga. It's for people who don't like yoga. Follow or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at averyrich.com.